It's time for JT the Brick.
The Raider offseason is about content that is productive.
Shotgun to O'Connell. Backpedaling, lobbing to the end zone, trying to get at him. Makes the grab! Touchdown, Raiders!
I thought Aiden O'Connell played pretty well last year. He's a quarterback who's serviceable.
Now pressure. Gets out of there. Crosby's got it from behind! Back at the 45-yard line!
There's no better player who plays with heart and passion and speed than Mad Max Crosby. Wait till you see him this upcoming season.
JT the Brick.
Dot to throw. Spillane on the blitz, and he wraps him up and holds him up for a sack.
I love the addition of Jack Jones. All the plays he made last year will be a great addition for this team moving forward.
Intercepted down the sideline. Intercepted Jack Jones, and he walks in. Touchdown.
And now.
Raiders! All right, now we're good. Let's get to it.
Here's JT the Brick.
Welcome back. Hour number two, JT Training Camp, Costa Mesa, California, on the flagship of the Silver and Black. Brought to you by the DeCasta Verde Law Group. Alex and Orlando DeCasta Verde, reason why we're here, right off the field, right here in Orange, California. If you're back in Vegas, if you're through the state of Nevada, up in Reno, where their dad built an incredible legacy, if you get into an accident or injured, 702-222-9999, the brothers win. These two brothers have your back. The brothers have your back. La Familia, 702-222-9999. Yeah, I got the shades on if you're watching on the YouTube feed, JT the Brick YT, because it is bright, it is sunny, practice is over. So here's what's happening. I'll take you behind the scenes. Media's in the tent right there, right next to me. And they're at the tent, and there's the podium there, and they bring players out. In the morning, Antonio Pierce, players later in the day. Christian Wilkins is coming exclusively to Silver and Black Productions here on YouTube, and he's going to do a sit-down with Amber Theo Harris, who joined us earlier, and the great Eric Allen. So we're going to have that coming up here as we open up hour number two of the show, and then maybe Paul Gutierrez is going to jump in here. My recap of practice today is it's all about the defense. The defense is absolutely dominating at times. The offense hasn't had too many wow moments. You know, Dylan Lobby getting the ball out of the backfield's fun to watch. Brock Bowers, big Michael Mayer, all that's cool. Devontae, they're not doing a lot with Devontae here. It's a camp. Devontae's fine. Devontae's running some routes when it's 7-on-7, 11-on-11, and they're not tackling him to the ground. Devontae's catching the ball. But what I love about this team in this particular camp is Luke Getsy's install of the two tight end set, the 12 personnel, and how Brock Bowers is getting open over the middle of the field. And if Brock Bowers can run the underneath route and Devontae and Jacoby can go over the top, that's going to cause defensive coordinators to adjust. And once those adjustments come, let's say Devontae's having a big day. He's got 8 receptions for 90 yards, and Brock Bowers got 4 for 40 yards, and they're just ripping it up. You know how great it's going to be to hand the ball off after those guys are catching balls? And defensive coordinators are making adjustments with the double team of Devontae and maybe a double team of Brock Bowers or hitting him off the line of scrimmage. Zamir White running behind one of these big tight ends is going to be special to see. You know, no fullback, and these tight ends are going to block. These tight ends are going to be in the backfield. Brock Bowers is going to touch the ball behind the backfield, and I'm excited about that. All right, so we're going to be fluid here. I'm going to go quickly. We're going to look back at the number 4 game in Raider history, according to our team, not with the Raiders. This is Raider Nation Radio. This is our summer series. Here we go. We're back to our top 10, number 4. Raider
Nation. We now present the Raiders' top 10 games of all time.
And the Raiders have won the Super Bowl championship. They are the world champs.
The history of the Raiders.
He is going to get inside the five. Touchdown!
The games that helped make the Raiders one of the most recognized franchises in NFL history.
Just win, baby.
The Raiders' top 10 games of all time begins now. Number 4.
All right, we're at the 4th greatest Raider game of all time. I take you back to December 31st, 1967. The Raiders dominate the Oilers in the 1967 AFL Championship game. The Raiders win 40-7. So this is a blowout, but it's important because this led the groundwork for the Raiders to be a championship franchise. the birth of the Raiders in 1960 and a championship in 1967 in the AFL. The Raiders posted a 13-1 record that season, won the AFL Western Division. The Raiders outscored their opponents 468-233. The Silver and Black led the AFL in scoring, and only Houston allowed fewer points. The Raiders captured their first American Football League championship and earned the right to play in Super Bowl II, the first of five Super Bowl appearances to date for the team of the decades. The 1967 Raiders were coached by John Rauch and anchored by the likes of center Jim Otto, guard Wayne Hawkins, running back Hewitt Dixon, the great Willie Brown at cornerback, and linebacker Dan Connors. Rauch was named the AFL Coach of the Year in 67 in just his second year at the helm. The Raiders' 13-1 record that season and won the division gave them momentum. And with all the points they were able to score, they had a high potent offense, but their defense was called the 11 Angry Men, and they were really good. Now, going back here, everybody, we're talking about the AFL, the American Football League, formed in 1959 with the Raiders joining in 1960. And after a tryst of faith, shifted the origin of the franchise from Minneapolis to Oakland, California. After winning only three games from 61 to 62, Al Davis was hired as the head coach and general manager and immediately set the tone, turning the club around. After steady improvement and narrow playoff misses, Mr. Davis now serving as managing general partner, the Raiders took that next step in 1967. Now, this game was about the Mad Bomber, Daryl LaMonica, who had unbelievable drives in this game, and Blanda field goals. Raiders went up 3-0 with 3:06 left in the first quarter. The Raiders' defense turned the heat up on Beathard, causing a Willie Brown interception on the second play of the Oilers' next possession. And the Raiders were back in a struggle here. Blanda missed a 44-yard field goal. The Raiders drove back, and on a 4th-and-1, Houston took over on downs. So this game was about the defense clamping down Houston, clamping them down completely as the offense needed time to get going, and then they were able to explode. Blanda and his field goal, LaMonica with the big arm, the savvy veterans, pulled off a fake, and LaMonica connected for a 17-yard touchdown early in the second half. Blanda's extra point was good, 17-0 with 12 seconds in the first half, and the Raiders have the lead in a big game that would lead them to the Super Bowl. A lot of other big scoring plays in this game. The Raiders started to take control throughout the game with the Mad Bomber, Daryl LaMonica, who just had his way, picking off the defenders of Houston, underneath, middle of the field, over the top. He was electric in this game. A 12-yard touchdown pass from LaMonica to Bill Miller with 6:54 left in the fourth quarter capped a 8-play, 48-yard drive. Blanda's extra point was good, and the Raiders finished off the Oilers 40-7. The teams traded punts the remainder of the game, the Raiders getting the ball back with 10 seconds and running out the clock. The Raiders captured their first American Football League championship and earned the right to play in Super Bowl II. What a moment for the 11 Angry Men and the Raiders as we take a look at this team and what they were able to do. It was a dominant performance, and this sound is going to be really good. So if you're listening on radio, if you want to go to the app and listen to the sound, all cuts are from NFL films as we open it up here this hour. Let's begin with LaMonica's preview of what happened for this game.
Our entire Oakland Raider team was well prepared for the ball game. We were very confident, and especially our defense. We felt that we could hold her running to a minimum and that we could hold them 10 points or less. We knew that if we could stop Granger, who is one of the best fullbacks in our league, that we could contain him pretty well.
Also, NFL films. This is how far we go back with NFL films. This was their old time, back to 1967, game preview.
On New Year's Eve 1967, pro football's young and dynamic organization, the Silver and Black Oakland Raiders, played the Houston Oilers for the championship of the eight-year-old American Football League. Pre-game speculation centered around the question of Oakland's ability to score on a defense that had allowed the fewest points of any team in pro football. On the other hand, could the 11 Angry Men check the freight train rushes of fullback Hoyle Granger and Woody Campbell?
Also, NFL Films got into that defense. You just got a little tease there of the 11 angry men and how the defense shut down Houston's running game.
And how they stopped Granger. Every time number 32 touches the skin, there are black shirts to sit him down. Granger averaged more than 5 yards per carry during the season. His average for this game is slightly more than 1 yard per carry. By simply overpowering the Houston blockers, the Raiders limit the Oiler fullback to a sparse 19 yards gain. Halfback Woody Campbell fared no better. He was not permitted his heralded long game. The entire Houston running attack, which led the league in 1967, was handcuffed with a mere 38 yards.
You know, I was very fortunate in my life to call Daryl LaMonica a friend. Got to know him and his wife a bunch in the last 10 years of his life. With all the events I was lucky enough to host, the alumni events, the Mad Bomber, on that day, the offensive game plan.
Our game plan was basically to experiment a little bit. We felt that we could run on them as well as throw on them. And, of course, I probed a little bit to find the weaknesses that I did find. I found to our left side, their defensive right side, we did find some weaknesses off tackle and on our sweeps to the left side. So quarterback never bites the hand that feeds him, so I stayed at it.
So that was pretty cool to hear Daryl LaMonica talk about the game plan. Remember, they were calling their own plays at the time at the quarterback position, and he saw a weakness to his left on the right side of Houston's defense, and he took it apart there. Here's the Dixon touchdown run that made it 7-0 in the second quarter.
On the first play of the second period, a simple end sweep by Hewitt Dixon quickly becomes the longest run from scrimmage in AFL title game history. 69 yards to the final chalk mark. A last-second decision by quarterback LaMonica, who recalls the situation.
As the game progressed, I did notice that they were overloading when I went into a spread, as we call an ease formation, where I take and put both my outside receivers to the wide side of the field, or the strong side of the field. I did this, and they overshifted, and I got up to the line of scrimmage, and they were giving us what we call a strong dog. They were bringing their strong backer, Webster, also their middle linebacker. And so when I saw this, that I audibilized out of the play that I had and called an end sweep to their weak side or back into the short side of our field. We packed everybody down in the middle. We cut off their pursuit. And Pete Banaszak made the real big key block on the play. He had the lead block. He chopped down their linebacker. Gene Upshaw, our left guard, came out clean and turned it around. After that, it was just clear sailing for Stuart Dixon, who is a great runner and showed his speed.
The Raiders shocked the Oilers with a 10-0 lead.
All right, so that's some of the sound that we have here, and I think it's really good. So I want to go to the end of it, Bobby, if we can go to the final wrap of this win. This is a 40-7 victory for the 11 Angry Men and this great Raider team, going back to 1967 as they pull it off.
Oakland dominated the second half as they had the first, and the afternoon belonged to the Raiders and their fans. The final was 40-7. Losers of 19 straight games in 1961 and 62, the once pitiful Raiders had become the unquestioned champions of the American Football League. The 53,330 who sat so comfortably that afternoon in the Coliseum to watch a tough, single-minded, carefully constructed football apparatus dismantle the Houston Oilers was a far cry from the handful who short years before had watched the Raiders play in temporary homes. Those loyal fans who had supported the club from the beginning deserved a championship, perhaps more than any other fans in the history of sports.
All right, so there it is, 1967. We ranked that as our fourth greatest game in Raiders history. If you want to jump on YouTube, you can see what we're doing here at camp. Over on the side here, Christian Wilkins is talking to Eric Allen and Amber Theo Harris here. So we're pretty busy here today. A lot of people in our tent at Silver and Black Productions. And I'm trying to keep my voice down so they can conduct their YouTube interview. If you want to get through on that game, fourth all-time, there should be some old-timers or Raider fans who understand the significance of that game. It's 702-365-9200 if you want to get in and we can get this going. I'm excited about this game because, as one of our viewers here on YouTube pointed out, Michael Daniels said, "What a glorious celebration, JT, at the Coliseum on the 50th anniversary of the 67th 11th Angry Men celebration, followed by the Chiefs' victory. What a great day." So I ended up emceeing that event on the 50-yard line for the Raiders, or close to it. And that was the biggest crowd that I've ever been assembled in front of until I did an event in Las Vegas the first year with the alumni. So, you know, 55, 56,000 fans. It was halftime. Say a couple went to the restroom, but it was sold out. It was 56,000 fans, and I had my sports coat on and suit, and I was there on a podium with the 11 Angry Men. And we were able to interview Jim Otto, Daryl LaMonica, and it was a pure highlight, one of the great highlights of my Raider career. And I have a picture framed in my office at home with the crowd behind me and those gentlemen, many who are no longer here with us, including Jim Otto and Dan Connors. And when the list goes on and on, Jim Otto just passed away. And Jim Otto, we just lost. When you go through the list of the players who've passed away from that team and the impact that they had on the Raiders, that truly was one of the most important Raider teams ever assembled. So that's what we're doing today. We're talking about one of the greatest games in the history of the Raiders. We rank that at number four all time. So when you're at number four, there's only three left. We're trying to time it out before we head to Minnesota for the first game of the preseason, which is a week ago, pretty much a week from this upcoming weekend coming up. So I think Bobby threaded the needle nicely, and we'll be able to get to the bottom of this and give you the final three games left. I think you know what the final three games are, but I don't think you know the order of the final three games. Want to say goodbye to our YouTube friends. Appreciate you being in here today. Thanks for this. This was a grind trying to get through the internet and get this thing up and running today, but we're happy we're able to pull it off. If you want to talk about this game, 1967, 702-365-9200 is the number. And when we come back, A.J. Cole. I love hearing what he has to say. He just spoke to the media. If you didn't see it on the app, you'll hear it next. Probably the best punter in the league. His thoughts and Paul Gutierrez a little bit later on. JT live from Costa Mesa as we're brought to you by Virgin Hotels. Thrilled to welcome them back in our radio portfolio where my DNA runs through Virgin Hotels Las Vegas.
Yeah, versus, I believe it was Kansas City. They had the dual returners back a few years ago. Yeah, so he knows how, you know, great turnovers too. So we're happy with those guys. Multi-dimension, as they have to be.
All right, JT, back with you as we continue. McMahon on Cole coming back, which I'm excited to meet the special teams coach and a lot of other coaches today. I had a really nice conversation with Al Luganville, former legendary college coach who's here on the Raiders staff, and he was around today. Fantastic. Again, good conversation with Mark Davis today about some things on and off the record and how he's out here today in Costa Mesa. And then, you know, finally, the players we've gotten, it's some unique players along the way. Some of the younger players, some of the players that have been here a while, Trayvon Merrick, Isaiah Palomal. Nice to talk and make new friendships and relationships with these guys. The 1967 game, look, I'm just happy I did this summer. We put a lot of work into it. We don't get a lot of calls on it because a lot of people don't know the history, like this guy, Raider 66, who loves this and lives through it all. Take us through this game. We have it ranked number four all time.
Yeah, JT, this was incredible. I mean, it was a blowout, as you can tell by the score, you know, 40-7, but it was the Raiders' only AFL title, and it does stand out in that in Raiders' history, but that 67 defense, that was something of legends. I mean, these guys put together 67 sacks and 30 interceptions in a 14-game season. They started the season against the Broncos and shut them out 51-0. The Broncos had -5 yards for the game. So that kind of set the tone for the season. And then they finish it up in the AFL title game, and the Oilers, who represented the East, got less than 150 yards in that game and got beat down 40-7. That team also has, I believe, it's still an NFL record for 665 yards lost on those sacks. That's almost 10 a sack. It's just phenomenal. Look at this. If we could get this out of our front four, this is the standard, the gold standard. The front four for the Raiders, Dan Birdwell had 14 and a half sacks. Ben Davidson, 9, Tom Keating, 9, and Ike Lassiter, 17. That's 49 and a half sacks from that front four. Could you see this team getting anywhere close to that? It's just absolutely fantastic. But the defense also chipped in with six defensive touchdowns, and it was just phenomenal. I love talking about the defense. The Bleacher Report did a ranking of the top 25 defenses of all time, and they put the 67 Raiders 11 Angry Men defense at number 19. I think they should be higher, but yeah, 67 team was awesome. And too bad they went against the Packers in Super Bowl II. And not many people know that, but that was Vince Lombardi's last game as a Packer coach. He was moving on to Washington.
Yes.
And they were going for a three-peat. A three-peat's been done. It's just that the first Packer win, they didn't have a Super Bowl that year in 65. So they were going for the three-peat. Vince Lombardi's last game, didn't matter who was playing against them. I think the Packers weren't going to lose to you know, God and the Apostles. It was just absolutely incredible. But, yeah, that team was something special. Thank you for the time again, JT. Love the list. Can't wait for the top three.
Go you Raiders. Got it. There he is, Raiders 66, as we got to number four, the 11 Angry Men. And that's 1967. I think the greatest era in Raider football was the 1970s, with all due respect to the 80s, with the Super Bowl wins there. But the greatest era of football played, I think, with rivalries, intensity, older rules, more physical, harder hit, more legendary players. Look, we've had a lot of legendary players the last 30 years. Again, you can go to DeMarcus Ware, you can go to Ronnie Lott, whoever you want. But when you go to the last 50 years or 60 years and go back and dig through some of these names to understand how great of a player Danny Connors was, to understand Hubert Dixon, to understand the players that played back then, Big Ben Davidson, all those players and what they were able to do along the way, it's incredible. And this is interesting that we're able to get them on this list. They were, of course, going to be on the list. It's a championship team. But December 4th, that's New Year's Eve, right? We were talking about ghosts to the post, Christmas Eve games, New Year's Eve games. Ladies and gentlemen, does everybody understand the pattern here? Red, right, 88. When you look, let me go through some of the dates on so far what we've done with the greatest games of all time. Red Ride 88 was January 4th, 1981. Ghost of the Post, December 24th. That's Christmas Eve of 77. Sea of Hands game, December 21st, 1974. The Heidi Bowl, November 17th, 1968. Raiders versus Chargers. Right when we eliminated the Chargers to move on to the playoffs, January 9th of 2022. So do you notice the pattern here? The AFC Championship game that came in number 10, January 19th, 2023. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about games playing in November, December, and January. That's when you got to win football games and have some of the greatest games of all time. You can't have those games. You know, we had a couple of early season games that were here. September 7th, Al Davis, 1963, his first win as a coach. But most of these games go back to winter, cold weather games, some of them on the road with everything on the line. This team needs to, this organization needs to get back to winning at that level. Hopefully this training camp with Tom Telesco and Antonio Pierce, it's a fresh start. You know, no Raider fan wants to sit around and start the reset button every 3 to 4 years. But when Mark Davis let go of Josh McDaniels, he quickly hit the reset button because even though Coach McDaniels had years left on his contract, I'm talking years and a lot of money, hey, man, Mark made a quick decision. It was a mistake to hire him. The intention was great. The intention was good. The goal was the Patriot organization way of winning, which they did. That's all they did was win, and it didn't work. They pulled the plug quickly to go to this new regime led by Tom Telesco and Antonio Pierce, and those guys got to get it going sooner than later. And hopefully this is the beginning of something great, not good. We've seen good football. We need to see great football. A.J. Cole just met the media a few moments ago, the Pro Bowl punter, multiple Pro Bowls, right here in Costa Mesa. Let's listen to a little of it.
I'm trying to get in the game.
He did say he'd be fine if a defensive player took his kickoff job, but not if you took it.
Really? Yeah, I mean, I can understand that. You know, me and him have the most healthy and fun of rivalries of all time. So I think that just the ego in him couldn't handle that. But it's all in good fun.
AJ, how has camp been for you just in general so far?
Yeah, camp's been great. I mean, you know, they say in California you pay for the weather, but we're just renting it for a little bit here. It's been like 76 and sunny every single day, so we're walking around in flip-flops and shorts and t-shirt, and it's been good. It's been a really great experience just being in Costa Mesa. I think getting away is really valuable for team bonding. You find yourself when you're home, you know, you guys kind of finish and they sort of rush out of the building a little bit to get home and to see their family and all that. And here we're kind of on our own. So I found that players are spending more time like in the cafeteria, chit-chatting at the table. And I think that's good. I think that builds bonds and builds relationships. And ultimately, I'm a big vibes guy. So I think that the team that's the closest wins the most games. And I think it's a really important factor.
Conversation about the rookies singing here today. Who's bringing the good vibes and the good vocals?
I mean, to be honest, it's been absolutely pitiful so far. Some of it's not their fault. It's happening in an 8 a.m. meeting sometimes. And I mean, you know, you're still on maybe your first half cup of coffee at the time. You know, you only got like 50 milligrams of caffeine in your system and people aren't really warmed up to it. So it's a tough, stale environment. But I'd like to see more from them, to be honest. I'd like to see a little bit more enthusiasm. There's a couple keys you got to know up there. You can't be scared when you're up there for the rookie show. You got to go up there confident. They can smell blood in the water. It's a bunch of sharks in that room. So if you show a little bit of fear, everybody's going to boo, start pouncing on you. And then you got to know the first word of the song. Everybody's like, I know the song. And they get up there and then the lights are bright. And then all of a sudden everything goes a little bit sideways. So you got to know the first word of the song. That's a coaching point to all the rookies.
All right, that's a little bit of A.J. Cole. You can find that all at Raiders.com as we welcome in Paul Gutierrez, who's kind enough to join us from ESPN. And interesting time for you to be back in Southern California. Yeah. With your Barstow roots, your Vegas, UNLV years, and we talked about my nightmare car ride. And thanks for at least giving me a little advice along the way about your family and your roots back there in Barstow.
Yeah, born and raised in Barstow. Mom and Dad actually were not in town. They were actually in Laughlin for Carmageddon 2024. So luckily they missed that whole mess. But yeah, I mean, I reached out to, you know, anybody else that I knew that needed some help. I'm sure they would have taken you in. They probably would have just given you the keys to the house anyway.
I would have greatly accepted that. And I learned about the 40. I never knew about the 40 because I was always been on the 15. Once I got in the 40 and I went out into the deep abyss of the 40, and that was gridlock for 3 hours. That's when it got a little bit dicey.
And the 40, and that's how I know I'm actually a Southern California person as opposed to being up in the Bay Area. In the Bay Area, they don't put the in front of the names of free. Up there, it's 101. It's 5. Down here, it's the 40, the 15. But yeah, the 40 is actually, it kind of mirrors Route 66 from back in the day. So
sure.
There's still kind of parts of it that are off to the side of the road. I'm sure there were some cars broken down on that as well. But yeah, and then Barstow got hit by an earthquake 2 days ago. So I reached out to my parents, like, yeah, quick jolt. So yeah, it's strange days.
You have a lot of expertise in watching practice and knowing what to look at. And I'm trying to take our audience behind the scenes of how do we judge these quarterbacks when they're going up against the twos and threes and there's no JPJ and no Colton Miller. How you doing it?
It's tough because the sound you just played of A.J. Cole talking about how pitiful the singing was, somebody could take that and apply it to what we've seen from the quarterback play thus far. Not fair, I understand, and that's kind of a cheap shot. But it's tough because you're missing the entire left side of your offensive line, really. But I think it's held up fairly well, and you're going up against a defense that expects to be a top 10, if not a top 5 type unit. And it just seems like today, I think, was the best day yet of what the quarterbacks, in terms of just looking comfortable in their own skin. And it's really simple when you look at it and from what we're watching. And obviously, it's not as simple as what the coaches are looking at here, but looking at two entirely different skill sets. Aiden O'Connell obviously has the bigger arm, and he can get the ball downfield, but he's stationary back there. He's virtually immobile in relation to what Gardner Minshew can do. When he can roll out and extend a play and look for a tight end cutting across the middle, you know, there's just what do you want to do in what situation? So you have to start wondering, okay, well, if they're going to have to do this in the middle of a game, are both guys going to actually get run in the same game, and how good is that for the offense? Is that a positive? I don't know. It's only two padded practices in. And as Raiders owner Mark Davis told me yesterday, okay, now camp is beginning. Now they got the pads on. Now we can actually start to evaluate some things. And it's just really tough to watch it because, they're not getting the full-on rush, but they're getting just enough to get uncomfortable, which is good. And there's still so many wayward balls. Yesterday, I counted two or three hospital balls to Devontae himself. So that's not a good thing.
Paul Gutierrez joins us, ESPN. So what about the underneath stuff, which when I see Bowers make a play, what I'm amazed about with Bowers, if the ball's at his knee, is his waist, is his chest, the way he catches it and moves fluidly is different than Michael Mayer, who will catch it, pull it in like Gronk, and then turn his body. Bowers is spectacular to me when it comes to his fluid flow.
There he, again, you hate to compare players to animals, but there's sort of like a gazelle type.
Yes, I use that word. Yeah, you're right.
A gazelle type personality to him. The way he just, everything seems very fluid. Not effortless, because obviously he's giving effort, but there is a difference between the skill set there and Michael Mayer, who's more the big, I don't want to say plotting, because that could be taken negatively, but that's what it looks like in relation to each other. So there were a couple plays there. There was one today exactly where Gardner Minshew rolled out to his right, extended the play, waited for something to happen. He backed up. He stepped up in the pocket, and he found Bowers coming across the middle, hit him, and then he bounced off of Nate Hobbs and just kept going. So if that's what it takes to happen, that's what it's going to take to happen.
What could, we're not in the room, but if Antonio Pierce is pulling together the offensive coaches here in their meetings today, what is he saying to them, knowing that they're limited on the offensive line, but what he wants to see with deploying this 12 personnel in the tight ends as Devontae's here? I'm not worried about Devontae. They don't have to run a lot to Devontae.
Right.
But, man, when they're trying to get things going and I'm seeing balls kind of fluttering downfield, and I know that Max today touched, you know, he's touching Aiden, which means it's a sack and the play keeps running. Yeah. That doesn't happen in an NFL game.
No, and somebody tipped a ball from Aiden today, too, where the ball just kind of fluttered out and there was almost an interception. I'm going to imagine, and I'm going to go back to Antonio Pierce's background as a player himself, as a linebacker. He wants them to establish the run. Games are won and lost at the line of scrimmage.
Sure.
And when you do that, when you establish that, and you got Zamir White just bowling ball and going off of people, what does that set up? That sets up the play action. So we were sitting there watching, and I was sitting with Q Myers, and we were watching. I said, okay, here comes play action. Not that I'm some genius or anything, but you saw them set it up, and sure enough, boom, boom, there it was. Little short intermediate pass. Okay, first down. So I would imagine that that's where they want to start. You have to establish the line of scrimmage. You start the running game. Everything kind of flows off of that.
What's your analysis of Zamir White from what you've seen in pads?
Yeah, again, just a tough customer to bring down. I mean, it was kind of the same thing we heard with Josh Jacobs, right, that he didn't have the breakaway speed, and then we saw him walk off in Seattle. It's kind of the same thing. He seems to me like a little bit more, I don't want to say fluid, but he's taller, obviously, but he's not the running backs we grew up with. He's not Eric Dickerson. No. He's not Marcus Allen. Nobody is. But he's got a different type of body, and it's a different body than Josh, too. So what I've seen from him is a guy that is actually looking for contact, where Josh Jacobs was looking to hit a hole and bounce around and everything. And I remember in practice one time, he told the defensive back that was coming up on him, hey, you got to make a business decision. Zamir White, I'm seeing, he doesn't want anybody to make any decisions because he wants to make the decision himself, and he's looking to make contact and just keep going.
Wrapping up with Paul Gutierrez, who do you think has the lead for the second corner opposite of Jack Jones?
The past 2 days, just simply seeing who's getting the reps and who's out there with the ones, it's Ja'Corian Bennett right now. And when he came to the podium, very impressive young man anyway, very impressive player, the way he handles himself, comports himself. You talk to him at his locker, but he seems like he's just carrying a little bit more of a chip on his shoulder this year because he's not trying to prove doubters wrong as much as prove himself right. And there's something to be said about that for such a young player who's come from junior college to high D1 to being a draft pick.
All the years I've known you, it's always mostly been, because a lot of years they haven't won, it's been about the following camp chip on their shoulder. Yeah. I mean, I'm getting sick of it.
Same.
Because, you know, I understand. Last year was a good team. They won 8 games. They should have won 9 blindfolded against Minnesota.
Yeah.
So if they won 9 or 8 games, they end up with 8. They get treated like a 4-win team. That's just my opinion. Our listeners think the same thing. Now, Denver's in the division. They've lost 8 in a row to the Raiders. The Chargers have been a split with the Raiders the whole time, and they lose Mike Williams, Keenan Allen. They lose Austin Eckler. But they bring in Harbaugh, and everybody in this region believes that 6 or 7 wins. I don't know how to analyze this team's upside, because I like the team. I like the roster with Christian Wilkins and what they're doing and some of the players, Lobby coming in. But the quarterback thing, just no one can focus on talking about this team, Paul, from ESPN to NFL.com, NFL Network, Fox, without going for the low-hanging fruit every morning till night on, well, they don't have a quarterback. They do. They have 2 quarterbacks who are decent. They're not terrible. So how are you seeing this chip on the shoulder story evolving?
Yeah, it is the most important position in all of team sports, quarterback. And when you don't have an established guy there. Look, I look at it this way. I mean, 2 years ago, when you had Derek Carr starting for 9 years, he was never, in my opinion, and I think it's kind of proven out, he was never really the problem. But you weren't sure if he was actually the answer. Okay, so now he's gone. Now you're looking, you're like, oh, wow, we don't even know what the question is at quarterback, let alone the answer, or is it a problem? Right. So it's almost like addition by subtraction, so to speak, in one hand, then you look at it the other way. It's like, wait a minute, only if they had a quarterback. You're right. They got two guys that have started. They got two guys that have had success. Now it's not just the quarterback. It's a new scheme. It's a receiver on the outside in Davante Adams, who obviously wasn't happy all the time last year and says he's in a good place now, but you look at body language, and there's been some balls where he's not been happy, and I know he's leaving the team to go back home.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
Yeah, he's just going home to his – and this was planned from the start, that his wife's giving birth to his son, and when the time came, he was going to go back. So he's going back. Be interesting to keep an eye on it. And, again, all the congratulations in the world, happy, healthy baby, family, everything like that. But, yeah, you know, does he come back here to Costa Mesa, or does he stay there with the family and rejoin the team in Minnesota? We'll see. But he is going back with his family.
Last thing on Minnesota, I'm sensing this team's going to run out of time in Costa Mesa with the offensive line not at 100%. And it could be a good thing in a way to see more playing time in the preseason. Right. Am I onto something? Could you expect if these camps – practices don't get better for the offense, that Pierce is going to be, and Getsy is going to say, we got to get these reps in preseason games?
They're going to have to, because they don't have the joint practices anyways. Yeah. So that's part of what was kind of factored into their training camp thing was, well, no joint practices. The starters are going to have to play regardless, depending upon how much in tune they are within each other. They're going to have to play that much more in the preseason.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate you.
Sounds good.
There he is, Paul Gutierrez. Really appreciate him coming on. Check out all of his work at ESPN.com. When we come back, I'll wrap up the show here in a little bit if you want to get through here. Paul made a lot of good. We had Vinny and Paul on today, Amber Theo Harris, Isaiah Palomal. This chip on the shoulder topic is an important one, and we'll continue to talk about it here going forward. I'm going to start tomorrow. Excuse me. We're off tomorrow. Harry Ruiz is in for me. Camp's closed tomorrow. So tomorrow there's no setup here. I think Q's got a place where he's doing the show. Harry's going to do the show for me back in Vegas, and I'll be back here on Friday. A lot more to tell you when we come back on the flagship of the Raiders.
Seconds, and here comes Coach Rauch's decision. A fake field goal with LaMonica rolling out. Dave Kasurek is wide open, chased only by a Houston tackle, George Rice. Oiler coach Wally Lim calls it a key play. Darryl LaMonica tells how it happened.
I felt that the coach made a very wise decision in saving the play for the time that we did use it, because it was a big surprise play, and of course Webster had overcommitted himself. He was coming in to block the field goal if he could, and he got out of position, which allowed me to roll and get to the outside fairly clear. They just couldn't recover in time to get to Dave Kasurek, who I believe made his first reception of the year. A big reception for 7 points, and it gave us a tremendous advantage at halftime.
It's Oakland 17-0.
Well, we looked at the 11 Angry Men in the 1967 AFL Championship. Just something you should know if you're a Raider fan, and we appreciate you listening on the flagship of the Raiders. You need to know that the Raiders' first championship and their first Super Bowl appearance, Super Bowl II, came off the AFL Championship game in 1967 against Houston. So now you know that. I think a lot of people knew it, but no, a lot of people weren't alive for it. So why are we doing this? Because we want you to learn more about the history of the Raiders. That's it. Pretty simple. Pretty simple. We're excited about it. My wife is circling this camp, and she's going to pick me up here in a little bit. We're going to have a nice day tomorrow out on the water. We'll be back on Friday, and we'll jump in with our top three games of all time. Then I'll head back to Vegas, and then they're flying me out here for 2 days. Next week before we fly with the team to Minneapolis. Man, that's coming up pretty quick, isn't it, everybody? The Minnesota Vikings will be the first preseason game of the year, the only road preseason game for the Raiders in Minneapolis. And I'm just sensing from talking to Vinny today and Paul Gutierrez, I try to be really optimistic. If you don't get that and you want me to be doom and gloom, I don't live a life of doom and gloom with the Raiders in July. We're going into August. I don't do that. because I'm here 6 days a week when the season starts. That's part of my program. And if there's going to be ups and downs and there's going to be some downs, I got to absorb that when it comes to me in September, October, November, December. It's not going to happen in July. Not. I'm not going to get up here going crazy. Oh, my God, the quarterbacks don't look good. Oh, my God, Gardner Minshew threw a ball that was tipped for an interception. Not going to do it. Not going to do it. But there are people that I put on the air, such as Paul Gutierrez, who's writing about the quarterback play, and we give him an interview. And he gives us great information on what he believes are the problems with this offense. So my level of concern is not high because Jackson Powers Johnson and Colton Miller are coming back to play at 100%. They're going to be healthy. Colton's coming off a surgery where he's good to go, but they're bringing him along at that pace. Jackson Powers Johnson, who's going through his protocol with the trainers and everybody, should be ready to go from everything I'm hearing. If that wasn't the case and we had a running back or a linebacker who blew out an Achilles or a knee, which is happening around the league, then you go, oh, my God, what are we going to do there? Oh, my God, what's going to happen there? That isn't the case. The depth of this team is pretty strong. I mean, you could all close your eyes unless you're driving, and you can do it with me. You all know it's Devontae and Jacoby. You know it's Trey Tucker, who has had the dropsies. He's dropped the ball a little bit here and there. Okay. You work on that at camp. Does that mean Trey Tucker's going to drop a bomb in week five? I hope not. I hope not, but I think he's working on that every day to be a better productive receiver with his feet on the sideline and hauling in balls when there's a lot of traffic. He's got to work on that a little bit better. But the offensive line of Colton Miller and Jackson Powers Johnson are at 100%, along with Dylan Parham, Andre James, and it looks to be Thayer Mumford on the right side. Now, from talking to Q, who's coming up next, and everybody else, this DJ Glaze, really impressed Vinny, really impressed Vinny. And Vinny was also impressed a lot with Bowers, and we know Bowers is going to be an exceptional player this year. I think what's going to be the key for the Raiders the rest of training camp, if they see Bowers is one of the most valuable players on this team, okay, he could be the best player on this team on offense other than Devontae. If that's the case, there's no need to sugarcoat it. He's got to go. He's got to be ready week one in Los Angeles against the Chargers to have 9 or 10 receptions and be the reason the Raiders win that game. But I feel like the Raiders are not running out of time. I'm sensing the pressure is going to get on the offense quickly here, that they have to have more good snaps. I was sitting with Levi Edwards today, Eric Allen, Vinny Bonsignor, Paul Gutierrez was next to me, and we're talking. And there was an incomplete pass. And I looked at one of the gentlemen and I said, you know something? Here's the deal. That pass that was just incomplete, they're never going to get that. We don't have an infinite amount of plays to run here. There's not an infinite amount of plays. Once you throw an incomplete pass, you can't get that play back. So that's one less play you have the entire training camp before you get into the preseason games. There's got to be more wow plays and productive plays from the quarterbacks on this team. They don't have to be great every practice. Jimmy Garoppolo wasn't last year. And Jimmy Garoppolo went into Denver and ran inbounds for a first down to ice the game, and the Raiders won on the road at Denver. He wasn't perfect. I remember that. A lot of people were nervous about Jimmy G and the way he didn't have a good camp last year. And then he ended up getting injured, so you have to move on from that topic. But for Aiden O'Connell, with Gardner Minshew right on his tail to take his job, Gardner is going to want to have big play after big play. I haven't seen much of that yet. I haven't. And for Aiden O'Connell, there's a good play, there's an average play, a good play, an average play, a bad play, an average play. And hopefully he has a couple of wild plays and big plays coming up here. And if that's the case, I think everybody will be in a really good spot. And I hope to see that these guys are going to take the preseason seriously with the minutes that they let the starters play. Because the starters without a padded practice, it's called the joint practice with another team, without any of that, that is huge. That is huge because that could have been a couple of practices that could have been a big difference maker for the Raiders in preparation. They don't have a joint practice here, so I think they're going to have to emphasize the preseason a little bit more. You know, when I look back at the 1967 team, and you look back at the helmets that were worn on that time and what the players were doing at that time, just incredible. Just incredible. We're going to talk more about the Raider organization here over the next couple of days. Thanks to Bobby for putting the show together. Amber Theo Harris joined us. Isaiah Palamal, Vinny Bonsignor, and Paul Gutierrez. It's a pretty good show. And I know Q's got a bigger and better one coming up because he's on for 3 hours, and he is live from training camp. I will see you back on Friday. Harry Ruiz, the Latino voice of the Silver and Black, will be in for me tomorrow. I'm going to have a nice day out here with my wife, enjoy Southern California, and then get ready as the countdown to the grind continues here. Love being out at Costa Mesa. Love the fact that we have a flagship radio station here for you. Have a great rest of the day. Q Myers is ready to go.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.